Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Pitches it out to Barkley, takes off to the outside. He's at the 50, he's at the 40, he's at the 30, he's going to go! 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Saquon Barkley, 60 yards on his opening touch.
Joining us now on the D&M Leasing Hotline, he's cool enough to fire up the Zoom fan cam and Twitch. This has been a whale that we have not been able to track down.
Oh, he's so busy.
My gosh, the Ross Tucker pod. He's got all the different Odyssey connections. CBS Sports, Westwood One. We think he's still our good buddy, Ross Tucker, joining us on the Home of the Cowboys. Good morning, sir. How have you been?
Fantastic. Did you guys try to get me during the season and they said no?
We can't
but
afford
the last,
you.
Like, 4 weeks.
We can't afford you. All of a sudden, you switch on over to that Michael Irvin, you know, that payment schedule, and we're like, what the heck? I feel like I can't even text you on the side because of your people.
All right, so first of all, you guys can always text me. Secondly, I don't decide. All I know is how many total radio hits I go on during the year for Odyssey. I don't know how they decide which ones to put me on. I go on in Buffalo and Kansas City every week. Maybe they just want you guys to have a better team first before they put me on with you guys.
All right, we'll get into your good team that's still playing. But first, we have to get your thoughts on the reality of Brian Schottenheimer, new Cowboys head coach.
Yeah, I think I'm about to blow your guys' mind away.
Uh-oh.
Make sure you're rolling on this on both video and audio.
Just okay? Like his Micah Parsons prediction, we'll save it in the archive.
Yeah, I'm going to give you four reasons why I like the Brian Schottenheimer hire.
Okay.
First of all, a lot of people will tell you that he was never the hot shot coordinator. Go back when he took Mark Sanchez to two AFC championship games, running the rock, play action. Sanchez, two playoff games. Brian Schottenheimer was the OC. That's number one. Number two, even if you think he's not the hot shot coordinator, you know what the reality is? A lot of those guys end up sucking as head coaches because it's a totally different skill set. You know, game planning and calling plays is not the same as clock management, setting the culture of the team, or everything that goes into being a head coach, CEO. Maybe Brian Schottenheimer was an average coordinator, but he's a great head coach as opposed to guys that are the opposite.
But
great coordinators, but they can't make it as head coaches.
But should we be worried that he's also calling the plays?
That's a fair question. Let me get to my other two, then I'll get to that. The other two. I had 9 head coaches in the NFL, okay? His father, Marty Schottenheimer, is the best head coach I've ever been around, okay? I had Bill Parcells when I was in Dallas. I had Bill Belichick in New England. I had Joe Gibbs in Washington.
Wow.
I know that Marty Schottenheimer did not have the success those guys did in terms of winning Super Bowls or what. I get that. All I'm telling you is sitting there as a player, watching what they say to us, watching how they go about it, Marty Schottenheimer was the best head coach I ever had. Better than the 3 Hall of Famers I just named. And the last thing, maybe the most important thing, the reality is nobody knows anything. I mean, you go back to 2016, the guy that was ranked as the worst hire was Doug Peterson. In 2017, he took the Eagles to their only Super Bowl ever. Okay? And then the next year they went to the divisional round, the next year, whatever. 4 years ago, the Eagles hired a guy nobody had heard of. It was the last guy hired, a guy named Nick Sirianni, who didn't even call the plays for the Colts. Frank Reich did. Okay? He's now taking the Eagles to their second Super Bowl in 3 years. My point is, The press conference doesn't matter. How much buzz they have when they get hired doesn't matter. Nobody really knows. Everybody likes to act like they do. Everybody likes to talk like they do. Brian Schottenheimer might be awesome. He might be terrible. You don't know until they actually get in that chair and have that job.
Well said.
Ross Tucker joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, Ross, so you mentioned you were in Washington. 01 was your first year there. And Brian Schottenheimer, I know, was the quarterback's coach. Do you remember much about him, the way he ran his group, how vocal he was? Do you remember much about his personality within the locker room?
Yes. Well, first of all, I remember him being very young. And I remember, it's funny, a couple different interactions. One is I missed an OTA to go graduate from Princeton.
Wow.
Oh, wow. And, what a flex.
No. But you don't understand. I'm an undrafted piece of crap free agent. And I had to go into Marty Schottenheimer's office and I said, Coach, there's nothing more important to me in the world than trying to make this football team. But there's no scholarships in the Ivy League, and my parents paid a lot for me to go to Princeton. Is there any way I could go to graduation? Like, if you think it hurts me at all, he started to laugh and he said, if I paid that much money for my kid to go to college, I'd want to see him graduate too. So go ahead. The reason why I'm telling you guys this, I graduated on like a Tuesday morning. I drove right from graduation to the facility to watch practice that day to see who got the second team reps at right tackle instead of me. And while I was in there, Brian Schottenheimer poked his head in. He's probably thinking, we got done practice at noon. It's like 6 o'clock at night. Who is this? I think that this is like one of the reasons why they love me. He popped his head in to see who it was. And he said, how was graduation? He already knew. Like He knew that this piece of crap undrafted free agent from Princeton missed because I was getting graduated. I said, it was great, coach. Thank you. But I'm sure he told his dad, hey, that dude drove right here from graduation to watch and see what he missed today. And that was favorable. Remember this. That was the year, Bobby, that they cut Jeff George, our starting quarterback, after the second game. We played a Monday night game against the Packers. We get there on Wednesday, and everybody's like, did you hear what happened? I'm like, no, like, they cut Jeff George. In my rookie, I'm like, they cut our starting quarterback? Like, I was, like, blown away. He got a lot that year out of Tony Banks and Kent Graham. We were 0-5, including a loss to you guys in Dallas, when we were both 0-4. Jay Leno's making fun of us. It was a Monday night game. LeVar was crying in the locker room after the game. He was so upset. I had never been to Texas Stadium. Watching it on TV as an Eagles fan my whole life, I thought it was amazing. I got there. I was like, this place is a dump. I couldn't believe it. I was like,
it was run down by then.
Totally blown away. Anyway, he was very well respected. Yeah, you know, you guys should get on Sage Rosenfels. I can give you his number because Rosenfels was the rookie quarterback that year. And those guys were always doing extra stuff after practice. I remember Tony Banks, Kent Graham was the backup. Sage, they were doing stuff. But Sage could give you a lot of Brian Schottenheimer insight. But I thought he was good. I mean, look, I didn't interact with him that much. But from what I saw, he did a nice job. It's not easy to be like a 28-year-old quarterback coach. And Jeff George is probably 10 years older than him at that point.
That is incredible. Ross Tucker joining us on the D&M Leasing Hotline live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and Zoom. One of the other people they interviewed, one of the few, was Kellen Moore. All the reports have the Saints interviewing Kellen Moore yesterday. What are your thoughts about Kellen Moore, and how much have you gotten to interact with him covering the Eagles?
Yeah, just a couple times. One production meeting during the preseason games. And then I actually said hi to him before the NFC Championship game Sunday. I thought he called a really bad game against the Rams in the divisional round, and it almost cost the Eagles. They almost lost the game. I did not think he called a very good game. I thought NFC Championship game, obviously, they scored 50-some points. He did a terrific job. He did a nice job with them this year. It's so fascinating. They have like the weirdest offense I've ever seen, where Hurts really had – that was Hurts' best game in like 2 months. He hasn't really played that well. Saquon Barkley will have like 2 yards, -1, 6 yards, -2, 70. It's
yeah.
like
Barry.
They have a weird offense. I enjoy my interaction with Kellen. He's a pretty soft-spoken guy. I would be interested to see what he's like in the front of the room in the offensive meeting rooms. I don't feel like head coach run through a wall type.
Yeah.
When I'm talking with Kellen Moore, whereas I don't know if Brian has this in him, guys, but Marty Schottenheimer, holy crap. Holy crap. The only coach in my NFL time, the hair on the back of your neck standing up. Like, I mean, I can just think of some Marty Schottenheimer speeches right now, and I want to headbutt RJ right now. Like, I mean, just thinking about some of those speeches.
Do it.
I don't know if Brian has that, but Brian obviously witnessed like 10 years of it, so he's got to have some of it.
Ross Tucker joining us here at 105 through the Fan. I know Sirianni takes a lot of crap around the in Philadelphia, yeah, all across the country.
This room.
Not by me. I like him. They hate him. Is he a great coach? Is he a elite? I mean, he can go to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. I mean, where do you put him?
It's tough to say because I think this is at least the second time in the last 3 years. They have the best roster. I mean, they have the best players. It's like you look at them, it's crazy. Best O-line, best running back, top 5 wide receiver duo, maybe top 2 or 3. Dallas Goedert's a top 5 tight end. Hurts, when he's playing well, is like a top 10 quarterback, and they have the best defense in the NFL. I mean, it's bananas. So he doesn't get credit because of that. That's the thing, though. There have been plenty of other talented teams, and you guys know this, that coaches screw him up, and he doesn't do that. I know this. The players love him. He sets the culture and the tone. For whatever reason, that they love him. Part of the reason why he got into it with the Eagles fans is they told him during the bye week that they wanted him to be more aggressive, more passionate, more energy. He has their back, and so they love him. And he did a nice job hiring Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio this year as well. He's pretty good on the game management, clock management stuff. I think he's a good coach. I think he probably has to win one with this roster to say he's a great coach.
What does Big Dom do?
Like everything. More than you can imagine.
Like, how do you get introduced to him at first? Like, this is like Pulp Fiction. Like,
he's the wolf?
Something. What is he?
He called Darius Slay a couple years ago in free agency when Darius Slay was going to sign with the Ravens and, like, convince him to come back. I don't know. Like, everybody loves him. Everybody knows him. He does all the background stuff. He knows everything about every player. He knows everything about everybody. And, like, I don't know, the players trust him. You know, I don't know what he does for them, but the players trust him. And there's, like, a number of examples. Like Jalen Carter, right? Nobody else wanted to draft him. They were all worried about Jalen Carter. And whatever research Dom did, they took him. And that is a bad dude. They got him with, like, the 9th pick.
Yeah.
He should have been the first pick in the draft. He's one of the best 2 or 3 D tackles in the league now. He's an absolute monster. He's trying to kill people. I love him. Reminds me of like Junkyard Jerome Brown. And Dom said, no, he'll be fine. He's with these other Georgia guys. I got him. We got N'Kobe Dean, Jordan Davis. He'll be fine. They haven't had any issue with him. None so far.
If we see you in New Orleans, tell your security to let us through so we can say hello. I know you're probably too big for the Super Bowl parties now where we used to catch up for a beer, but we thank you for making this time, and you are well worth the wait. Well, not that long of a wait, but you're really good.
Good wait.
So I'm hoping to go to the media party and have beers with you guys Tuesday night. Westwood One might have a dinner. More importantly, everybody listening, especially you two, needs to go to myfrontpagestory.com because it's the best Valentine's Day gift ever.
Yeah.
Get your loved one. It looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper, framed, beautiful. I'm telling you guys, flowers, take them out to dinner. That doesn't cut it. She will cry tears of joy. You will win. And not because the Cowboys stink. It's because you got her the best Valentine's Day gift ever. MyFrontPageStory.com.
Yeah, you've been talking about them for years. It's like you have your own personal writer who's a columnist dedicate all the love and all the thoughts and all the feelings. There it is on the fan cam. Look at that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Look at that. There's no way any your wife or any of her friends have something like this. Put her on the front. Just to be able to say, hey, babe, I want to do something special for you. So I had a story written about you.
Yes.
That just sounds awesome. Then she'll have it hanging up in the house. Next time you get an argument, just be like, oh, really? Did you have a story written about me? No, you didn't. I had a story written about you. MyFrontPageStory.com. I'll see you guys in New Orleans.
Thank you, brother. The absolute best. Ross Tucker selling Brian Schottenheimer on the D&M Leasing Hotline. We got Golden State Clay last night, and Jimmy is suspended again. Next on The Fan.
PJ, who's already had two sensational rack attacks, going to drop the shoulder and drive. Dribble handoff. Thompson. Oh, yeah! Clay Thompson gives him a shimmy. He drills his seventh three of the first quarter.
Seventh three of the first quarter. Golden State Clay was at the AAC last night. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean, RJ, and Bobby here with Pepe and Carter in the back, live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. They should be in a total that stands for Turn It On, Leave It On. Mavs beat the... Don't look. How many wins do the Wizards have?
I already know.
I already saw that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've got one for you. Since November 1st, the Dallas Cowboys have as many wins as the Washington Wizards. They have four.
No way.
Yep. The Wizards are like 4-35 since November.
6-39 overall. They're 0-10 in their last 10, and they've lost 14 in a row as the Mavericks get a victory at the AAC 130-108. Klay Thompson scores 23 in the game, 21 in the first quarter, sits out the fourth as they beat down the sorry Wiz.
You could have sat everybody after the first quarter. You really could have.
You kind of did.
42 to 16.
Yep. And then like and Washington played. They played their entire, they played everybody dressed. If you dressed for the game, they played 14 guys. They played. I've never seen that. I've never seen somebody play a team play 14, 15 guys in one night.
I just love it for Kyle Kuzma. That he's sitting over there and having to I don't know about that Dallas team. I don't know if they're gonna be competitive enough.
How are we grading Klay so far? 877-881-1053. The numbers are 13-3-2 while shooting 41% from the field. This is about what I expected. I was excited, but not that optimistic that Klay was all of a sudden just going to turn around the end of the Golden State years.
I was going to say, if you look at, you know, when you get those progress reports for behavior for your kids in school or whatever, and it's like, here's the standards, and then it's they've got the letters for him. It's like meeting expectations, exceeding expectations. He gets an M. He's meeting expectations. It's just he's about what you realistically probably thought he was
going to be. Well, what were the expectations? It was different for different people. Some thought, oh, my God, he's the missing third for a championship.
Yeah, I think a...
That was too high of an expectation.
A guy who can...
Yeah, he's not a three.
When Luka's in the lineup... A guy who can be a deadly option, like I think can function as a deadly third option. If Luka's not in the lineup or anything else, he's not going to play very well.
Yeah, it's okay. So you know how like when you get a young, just a rookie player, you know, a 19-year-old, you're going to have a lot of ups and downs. Like you'll have some games where you pop, and then some games where you're not. It's almost the same way when you're aging, just on the reverse side. You're upside down, not necessarily as high, but you know, you'll have some really good games. Then you'll have some games where your body just doesn't show up. And I think that's what happens with Klay.
Jimmy Butler is embarrassing Pat Riley and the Miami Heat. I love this. I know you guys are sick of it. I love it. Give me all the drama, especially if it's not mine. Jimmy Butler got suspended again yesterday. He walked out of practice after they told him he was going to be coming off the bench, and he stormed out.
Yeah, he walks in. Does the Simpsons grandpa thing with the bar. Walks in, puts his hat on the coat rack, and walks right back out. Oh, you're not going to start? Okay, I'll see you. And now suspended indefinitely, which any suspension would have brought them to the trade deadline pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's where they're going with it.
It's going through the trade deadline. It's almost as if he's convincing Pat Riley that he's going to be a good soldier. All right, suspension done. I'm going to go back out there. But no. He's got the James Harden plan in full effect. I'm going to keep embarrassing you until you deal me. This is the way it is, Pat.
Yeah, and look, Miami's handling this the wrong way. Get him out of there. Like, just get him out. Like,
they
said
they're working on a trade.
Yeah, I know.
Now the asking price has come down, apparently. They're like, we may not. We're not going to get six number ones for you.
That's the thing. The longer they drag this out, and Jimmy may be hurting himself, but Jimmy in the process is going to hurt whatever value they get. If they keep having to suspend him and another story comes out like this and then another one comes out, then you're building up a reputation of teams going like, I don't want to trade for you. And so the Heat are, the longer they drag this out, the more they're hurting their own value in terms of being able to get something for them.
23-22, they're first in the Southeast Division and they're sixth in the East. This one made me really depressed when I saw that Jimmy is costing himself what per game?
Oh, gosh. 700,000.
532. 530K a game.
That's amazing.
Which, do you know how rich he has to be like, okay. Okay. All right, fine. Keep it.
But do you even make $500,000 a game in ticket sales as an NBA team? Paying that on one guy?
I would imagine you can get close. Like, especially if you consider parking and other things that go around it. Yeah.
Back to the Schottenheimer higher in Below the Belt coming up at 8:40 here on DFW Sports Station. Let's go on there around the rest of the league with the rumors. Pete Carroll introduced in Vegas, and there's a report from Ian Rappaport that he's remained close with Russell Wilson, and Wilson is a strong option in Vegas. Meanwhile, Art Rooney, the Steelers owner, it was so weird to read quotes from an owner and say, wow, he talks one time a year.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But Jerry, don't stop, at least for our benefit
Jerry
and purpose.
Jerry's the GM too.
That's right. Art Rooney said we would want to have Russell and or Fields back. Now, I don't know if he was speaking as a starter, but he's like, no, we want one of them back. But here's Ian Rappaport saying that Pete Carroll could be thinking about Russ in Vegas.
So we've now created a market demand for Russell Wilson. That's what we've hit.
We know that Joe Brady staying in Buffalo, no to the Saints. How about this news that the Texans moving on from Bobby Slowick, who was a red hot name last year. He was like the Ben Johnson last year of offensive coordinators out in the armpit.
I was stunned when I think Bobby sent this over. That blew me away. Like, what happened? Like, he was supposed to be one of the next big things along with Ben Johnson and Clint Kubiak. You know, they were among those names, Liam Cohn, they were among those names. And two of those guys have jobs now. One of them is still, I guess, the OC. I assume Kubiak is staying in New Orleans.
No, Kubiak just got hired as the offensive coordinator in Seattle.
So now we're all over. Now we're slow going to go. Like, what happened here?
I don't know. Here's the thing is that it's stunning how quickly it turned. Where and you remember we were talking back in November. We were previewing this game. I can't remember who we talked to, John McClain. And John had said that
die hard.
No concerns about Bobby Slowick. Like, everybody's still high on him. There's no, so something must have fallen apart really rapidly. Because I mean, they just had so much trouble in the second half of game scoring. But to go from the candidate last year to this, Mike Shanahan, when Connor Orr came out with his list of coaching candidates over here, of like future head coaching candidates, Bobby Slowick was on the list, and he had a write-up in there. He had reached out to Mike Shanahan and talked to him, and Mike Shanahan told me, he's like, that was the first thing I told Kyle when he got the San Francisco job. I was like, you need to go hire Bobby Slowick. He said, Mike Shanahan said Bobby Slowick was one of the sharpest young coaches he had ever been around in his life. It was just like full-on endorsement for him. And to go from that, like getting that kind of an endorsement from somebody so influential in what's going on in the NFL right now to get the hell out of here, that's stunning.
Todd Monken is staying in Baltimore as the offensive coordinator.
Well, good. Maybe he can run more than four RPOs in a game in the playoffs when you have Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Yeah, Ravens guy who we had on, Tony Lombardi, when we were previewing Baltimore-Dallas, I was like, oh, is this going to be playoff Lamar? And he goes, I don't know, but we're getting playoff Monken. So they have that type of feeling towards him when the postseason rolls around as the OC, even though the numbers are crazy and through the roof.
They are. I mean, they've been really solid. It's just that was a weird situation with four RPOs in a playoff game.
What about if Slowick, though, by the way? What if he is just kind of standing around? And Jerry said yesterday, Steven said yesterday, Schottenheimer will call the plays. They're going to hire an offensive coordinator who will function similar to the way Schottenheimer has. If Bobby Slowick's having trouble with play calling, bring him in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reach out.
I don't know much about him. I just know that the name was hyped up.
Yeah, and somebody who, again, gets a lot of positive endorsements from really innovative minds. Shanahan, Kyle and Mike both loved him. Go ahead.
Is there any theme to Schottenheimer's possible staff so far?
Yeah, there's a, so far, a lot of the guys that he's interviewed, it looks like a lot of heavy culture guys, which is stuff that he's referencing, but it's young. Like a lot of these names that we're hearing about that they're interviewing, they're young. There's a Clayton Holmes. No, not that one. From the Cardinals. He's their offensive line coach. And he's 42, really well respected, really highly thought of. They interviewed Chris Banjo for their special teams role. He didn't get it, but Chris Banjo, 34 years old. Couple of these other coaches, it's like 35, 36, guys on the ascent. It's a change where Schottenheimer seems to be much more willing to like, hey, let's build a really strong staff that'll build up that honestly had been an issue with Mike McCarthy here at times where it was like, is there their total security and confidence in having such a strong staff behind you?
And then, Chop, you asked yesterday if the Lions were pulling a Jerry Jones.
Yeah, so like Jerry was, you know, the comfort thing, right? They're only interviewing people that they knew unless they were forced to by the league. Well, the Lions have tabbed a guy to replace Ben Johnson. They're hiring John Morton. By the way, the only more generic name than John Morton might be Ben Johnson.
Johnny's son.
Yeah. So, and why is this a Jerry Jones hire? Well, prior to being with
Bobby, who's Johnny Morton?
The receiver? The old Lions and Chiefs receiver?
Good job.
Absolutely. So, prior to being, so he was with Denver. He was with Sean Payton in Denver. Prior to being in Denver, he was with Ben Johnson in Detroit with Dan Campbell. And where was he before Detroit? He was with Dan in New Orleans. So there's a the whole thing, it's a comfort, it's a relationship thing. It's a familiarity thing. And they've shown the Campbell era, they're one of the better run teams, but they're doing the same type of thing. Now, the problem is the Cowboys do it seemingly with every hire that they make.
Yeah, this guy, he has been around the league for a while.
He's like 50.
Yeah, he's 55. He has worked with Gruden. He's worked with Schottenheimer. He's worked with Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh.
Of course, the Bears are celebrating Ben Johnson. Did you see what the Bears chairman did the other day to Joe Buck? The shots fired?
Mm-mm.
George McCaskey was asked about Tom Brady being on the Lions Commanders broadcast. McCaskey said, quote, "I don't care who they put on, but when Joe Buck's on, I turn the sound down." So McCaskey, some random that we didn't even get explanation as to why or any follow-up, but shots fired at the great, let me say it, the great, all-time great Joe Buck. Joe Buck's a freaking
I feel
beast.
Like
Joe Buck's good.
Anybody who takes a shot in an official capacity with a team, anybody who's taking shot at a national play-by-play announcer, that usually tells me the play-by-play announcer's doing good. And like McCaskey just couldn't handle Buck probably talking honestly about them.
What have I told you?
What have I told you?
That the Dallas Cowboys just got a cockier, more charismatic, modern version of Jason Garrett. Below the belt. Next on 105.3 The Fan. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
How we doing, guys? Right kind of guy.
Doing, guys?
What else do we have? Dallas Football Cowboys. Are we going to hear that from Brian Schottenheimer now? Yeah, we're going to get some clapping. What if I told you you just hired a more charismatic, cockier, more modern version of Jason Garrett?
I find it hard to believe you'd be more charismatic than Jason.
If you get a more aggressive version of Jason Garrett on the chalkboard, but you get to retain his culture that he had here, would you take that kind of a coach as a replacement for McCarthy? Or do you say, I didn't love the Jason Garrett culture to begin with? Because I think that's ultimately what Brian Schottenheimer is going to try and instill here, is a culture similar to what Jason Garrett always sought to achieve and maybe fell short at times.
How do you think Jason's culture was different from Mike's, Choppy?
Well, I thought they were both like generally pretty good cultures.
Agree.
I think the Jason's culture was more like, I don't want to say one message, right? A singular focus. It felt like...
What's your one thing?
One thing. It felt like there was a little bit more... And this is really kind of strange because I think we know how Jason got the job. But I think there was more... I feel like there was more backstabbing going on in the Mike one.
I think so. Yeah.
And not necessarily by like any one person in particular, just like
there's some people who think Jason backstabbed to get his job.
Oh, I I was the first one to say it on the radio.
Oh, you said it.
I said it in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah, cite him.
Yeah, cite Sean me, James. Damn it. But
look,
once he took over, that was gone. It was all the messaging, all the corny quotes.
Let me just speak for a lot of the Tolos probably. Anything you sell me on and soup up this, that, and it mentions Jason Garrett,
yep.
No personal offense, I'm not going to get excited about it. So I hope that it's a different, better version, period.
Yeah, and I think if you're talking about what are the differences between what the culture was here under Mike McCarthy and what are the differences between the culture when it was Jason Garrett, I think one word comes to mind for me, emotion. This was a much more emotional culture with Mike McCarthy, and I don't think in a good way. Jason Garrett, the thing everybody hated, trust the process, and we're this and that, and we never get too high, never get too low. When you would hear Jason expand it in other settings, like when he went to Princeton, and he had that big talk with that form, you got a little bit more of a sense of what he talked about, which he said, if I have a baseline, if I say this is the way we operate every day, then there's nothing that will be unexpected. You will never be caught off guard by something because you just go, this is what we do. We do this regardless. I understood the pitch and it was effective at times. It really protected them at times where they could have gotten distracted. There were also other times where people felt like, well, it made you play down to competition at times. You weren't as locked in. You weren't as jacked up. You didn't have that sort of motivation. Whereas with the McCarthy era, I think there was definitely a lot more, hey, you know what they're saying about us out there, guys? And there was a lot more about letting that stuff in at times purposefully. And some of the you went with the ebbs and flows. Mike McCarthy would go with the highs sometimes, and he would go with the lows at times. And that, I think it went to the team as well. Now you could say, I want them to feel bad when things are going well. I don't want them to act like nothing's wrong. There's both sides of this that you can play. But I do think yesterday when you hear Brian Schottenheimer talk, his big thing is culture, culture, culture. That's what he wants. That's what he needs. It was Jane asked him near the end of the press conference, said, what do you, whenever you leave Dallas eventually, what do you want to be remembered as? And he threw out there first, he's like, well, first a champion. And they said, but he wanted to be viewed as the architect of, quote, one of the greatest cultures professional sports has ever seen.
Wow.
That was his top line item, which tells me that was the top line item he really pushed to Jerry and Steven, and what Jerry and Steven must have loved, because he wanted to drive home over and over again, that's what we're doing.
They clearly love the culture, and Brian is probably no dummy. The way he talked, let's just play cut 10, Peyton. If you sign your quarterback up to $60 million, you have to have the head coach and offensive mind be in love with the quarterback fit. And we got that yesterday.
You know, iron sharpens iron. And Dak and I have an incredible relationship, just like I have an incredible relationship with all these guys. Dak and I know how to push each other's buttons. We know how to have hard conversations. I laugh because I think about in training camp last year, a ball got intercepted, and we kind of had a thing in place where it was like, if you throw an interception, you come out. And so I took Dak out, and he's like, what? Like, he pushed back. He's like, ah. And the competitor in him is special. And so I think he and I working together, along with the rest of the guys, putting together the system, there'll be tweaks. There's going to be changes. He's the type of worker that changes an entire organization. And I think he and I see the game of football offensively very, very similar. And we'll have tons of communication moving forward on some of the thoughts of things we want to do, whether it's tempo or, you know, some of the different things we're trying to do with our play action passing game, the run game, things like that. He's easy to talk to, and I love and respect him along with all those guys.
The way it came across in small, again, a lot of this is being guilty of reading between the lines too much, but it's the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, I do.
We always try to translate Jerry.
It's hard.
You got little bits here and there where it seemed like to me Brian and Dak were in the hallway or a side room going, God, let's do this. Let's do this, and Mike's doing that. Just a little of those tidbits I get. But in terms of selling the Jones family, it was clear as day. It was clear as day what landed with them. Loving Dak, the bro-to-bro relationship that they seem to have, family with dad and Marty and mom, modernizing the offense, moving forward a little bit from what McCarthy had, and then culture. I could see Jerry and Steven and the antennas going up, loving it.
Yeah, and I know you're speaking for you. I'll speak for me. So this is not Sean saying, this is me. When you say you think there was a little bit of that with Dak and Schottenheimer, I think there was a lot of that. And I think there was a lot of that in 23. That's when a lot of the offense changed after the bye week. I think that was very player driven with Schottenheimer kind of overseeing and lobbying to Mike on their behalf of Mike. That's why I think so many of the players trust him. When they won out in the fight for the offense in 2023, the players did in the middle of the season, that was in large part viewed as Brian Schottenheimer was our advocate that managed to get this done for us. And I think that's...
Yeah.
And that's where the relationship, though, will be more difficult as it goes on, because now it's a different position for Schottenheimer. He's not the friend go-to guy anymore.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to have somebody else.
There is that. I think he also... He would sometimes...
You can't always be good cop.
He would reverse that sometimes, though. I think Mike would try to instill... And Schottenheimer's job would be, all right, I'm going to tell the players, guys, this is what you need to do. That's where... To be honest, it did create, probably in the last 2 years, a little bit of an uneven playing field. Like, was Mike always viewed as the ultimate authority or who they wanted to lobby to when they wanted something to get done? That probably created, naturally, not the best environment for everybody to be moving forward on the same thing. Here was the thing that I took away from this press conference, though, yesterday with Schottenheimer. There's a big difference between talking the talk and walking the walk. That was Jimmy always used to say that. If you're going to talk the talk, you better walk the walk. Jimmy used to scream that at the Cowboys all the time. So words ultimately aren't going to mean much. Just like how people were saying, I don't care what he says at the press conference. I need to see him win. I was really impressed with how Schottenheimer continued to underline definitive things that, like, not just this is my goal, we're doing this.
Yeah.
These were some of the things he said yesterday. Dak's going to play elite level football and he's going to lead us to championships. We're going to do a great job of marrying our runs and our passes and make those look the same. I'm ready now. I know what I want. I know what it looks like.
Yep.
I'm really good with X's and O's. I'm great with people. We're going to build this thing the right way. We're going to get the culture right. And that's a characteristic that he got from Marty. So Shotty's talked about this quote
before. Ross Tucker at the top of the hour, if y'all missed it, Ross Tucker said, I played for Gibbs, Parcells, and Belichick, and Marty Schottenheimer was my best coach of them all. Wow.
Massive praise. And the line that he got from his dad, he's mentioned this before. Before Dallas, he's mentioned it while he's been in Dallas. One of his dad's sayings to his team was, expect to win. Expect to win, expect to win, expect to win. And Shotty's always said it was a combination. Expect to win is one part, like, awesome preparation, and then another part, confidence.
He said, why else are we doing it?
Yeah, and so I think that's the thing, is that one of the things that you can see Brian got from his dad is, all right, the preparation and the confidence are massive to getting a team on board with the expectation that we're going to win ball games or we're going to do this and have that sort of approach. And I thought it stood out repeatedly that he was underlining, this is not a goal, this is happening.
Yeah.
And we're doing this. And that may honestly rub some fans the wrong way at some point.
Well, it doesn't for me.
I love it.
I love it too. I remember with Choppy, the first time we asked Garrett, this drove me crazy about the last two regimes. They always wanted to stay away from, like, these types of statements. What's your identity? No one ever wanted to answer it. McCarthy didn't want to do it. They act like it was some offensive question. Jason Garrett, same thing. But Jerry, what do you want the identity of the Dallas Cowboys to be of your football team? What are you guys? They act like it was a Belichick-type question. Brian Schottenheimer did a good job of talking Super Bowl yesterday without it coming across as blustery, headline-y, promotion-y. It felt real. And there's nothing wrong with, in my opinion, saying those types of things strongly, boldly. It doesn't mean jack squat will ever happen, but making these types of statements is something like Jerry Jones is petrified to talk about a Super Bowl around here anymore. He knows it's going to be some gotcha headlines, but there's just been this, like, I don't know whether it's a lack of confidence. I don't know whether I don't know what it's been.
It creates an attitude. It just creates it. Like, it doesn't matter whether it happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's true.
Yep.
It just creates an attitude.
I mean, Dan Campbell came in and talked in very similar manner in Detroit. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there is an aspect of that.
We're going to be more winning than we've ever won.
Exactly. Yeah. There's an aspect of that.
Direction.
That Shotty just said. The only thing that could annoy them, I think even when they lose, that's going to be a consistent message from Schottenheimer. He's going to talk about the things they're going to do, and people are going to say, stop talking about it. Do it. So when those struggles occur, I think it's going to rub some people the wrong way. But I thought he was really, really strong yesterday, and I think he spoke directly to the fans a couple times. I think he's heard the criticism, and I think he talked to them on a couple different occasions.
I want to hear from the Tolos. What did you think of the presser? Did it change your mind at all about Brian Schottenheimer? Are you going to go off on Jerry and Steven? 877-881-1053. Hit us up right now. 877-881-1053 on the home of the Cowboys, plus Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com. Final hour, Tolo Tuesday edition continues.